You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Well, time for us to check in with Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com, for a look at the week in politics. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Always my pleasure.
Well, as expected, Trump did very well in Michigan, and Nikki Haley stays on. Your reaction to that story this week?
Yes, and I don't understand why. Yes, Trump did as well as the polls projected. They always had him in the high 60s. That's where he ended up. And why she continues in this race is beyond me. I don't know why she thinks this is helping her, because I don't think it is.
Well, she argues...
For the future.
She argues that there needs to be a choice, you know? We're not a Soviet-style thing, and you got to have a choice, and so many states haven't voted yet. Let's give them a choice. So, yeah.
Well, they're making their choice, pretty clear.
Yeah.
and we'll see on Super Tuesday here, coming up in just 2 days when we air, it's going to be 16 states, and it's going to be a 16-state sweep for Donald Trump, including California.
Here's Haley. Recently said that she doesn't believe that Trump can win the general election in November.
He did not get 40% in any of the early states. It is very hard to win a general election if you can't do that.
All right, so she's trying to raise the wedge that Trump can't win, when most of the polling now shows that not only can he win, but he can win in those swing states that you've worried about, right?
Yes, and I'm not sure what she's talking about on the 40%. I mean, Lisa, he got 68, for example, in Michigan on the primary. But, yeah, but frankly, Larry, 40% does win when you have a third party in there, such as Robert F. Kennedy. And so I think she's totally off base.
Yeah.
And the polling indicates that in most places he still does better than she does even in the general election, he being Trump.
Yeah. Funding for her. Obviously, she's had funding. There's some stories that the Koch brothers have discontinued their funding, or the Koch organization. But, you know, there's a contingent of people out there. The elections have gotten interesting. It's like you kind of fund the other side. It's all like that. Here in California, as we have the election on Tuesday, there's all these ads on TV right now paid for by certain candidates, kind of making the other candidate look good because they want to run against a particular person. We're seeing that in the Senate race out here, where you got Adam Schiff building up a former baseball star. You've got somebody else building up a conservative Republican, all because they're strategizing in the jungle primary how to make this work, right?
These are the after effects of the jungle primary system, because it's all about who now can come in second place. Adam Schiff looks like he's got first pretty well wrapped up, by at least in every poll, but now it's the dogfight for second. And so what they're trying to do, Schiff obviously would like to have a Republican in that general election. And so he's running these ads, of course, that disparages, quote unquote, Steve Garvey as being too conservative. But I'm sure he's sending that into key Republican areas so they get that message that Garvey's conservative. That would bounce Congresswoman Katie Porter out of the race. And now she's advertising for that secondary Republican, Eric Early, trying to cast aspersions on Garvey as not being conservative enough or pro-Trump enough, because she has to get into second place or she's out. And the polling suggests that Garvey is in second place. Now, I noticed they tried to pull a fast one, the poor people did, a week ago. And they released this poll that showed her actually moving ahead of Garvey. But when you read the poll, it was conducted 2 weeks before the Emerson College poll that had Garvey pretty far out in second place. So it was a sleight of hand, because they released an old poll.
Exactly.
That tells you, too, that her internals show her in trouble.
Yeah. And you do what you have to do. Political advertising has been known to be somewhat shady at best. You know, you kind of put your point in, and then there's these mailers that we get inundated with, you know, just filling our mailboxes. And one of the reasons the Republicans were out saying, you got to get your vote in, you got to send in your ballot, because if you do, we'll turn off all that mail. It's like, okay, you got me. I'll vote so I don't have to get those cards. Right?
Well, that could be an effective technique. Get up and turn in the mail. Yeah.
And the turn-in has been slow. There have been some warnings about that, that turnout in California could be in the 30% range or slightly below that. I was talking with Scott Baugh. He, of course, running for Congress. Yeah. He says technically a lower turnout in advance is kind of good for Republicans because they're more Dems than Republicans, and that means the Dems are somewhat depressed, you know, with Biden.
I don't think there's any question of that, and we've seen that in all of the early primaries, that Republican turnout has been better than Democratic turnout. For example, in this latest Michigan primary, it looks like the Democrats are going to end up with about 778,000 people voting. Republicans had 1.13 million. And that's the pattern we saw in New Hampshire. We saw it in, well, Iowa, the Democrats didn't compete, but, and in Nevada, which was hard because, you know, that system they had there. But in the places where you can compare, South Carolina and Michigan in particular, Republicans running way ahead on turnout, I think that's a huge problem for the Democrats, and shows the lack of enthusiasm gap there. And you're seeing it in your California polling with projected turnout as well.
Yeah.
So Super Tuesday will be interesting to look not only how the candidates do, but what are the turnout numbers in all of these states. That's going to tell us a lot.
Indeed. Let's shift to recall. The word this week that Rescue California, recall of Gavin Newsom, is back. Two organizations, Save America and Rescue California, are sending over that notice of intent to recall. They had no problem getting those 500 signatures almost immediately to start the process. They say the reason, well, the governor granted 700,000 illegal immigrants free health care at a cost to taxpayers of $3 billion while cutting vital programs for veterans, school children, and disabled and homeless. And they listed off all the old ones, kept schools closed during COVID, blah, 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 all those other things. What is the reaction, do you think, from Newsom about all this?
Oh, I'm sure he's going to be fit to be tied, just like he was last time, because even though he would likely win the recall like he did last time, he's going to have to go out and raise millions of dollars again to run a real campaign if they qualify this for the ballot. So I'm sure he was perturbed with it last time, and this is going to be even worse for him this time.
He responded on social media calling this, quote, a wasteful move to distract from the existential fight for democracy and reproductive freedom, unquote. He always has to bring in that reproductive freedom issue, doesn't he?
Of course. And democracy. But isn't this part of democracy, a recall?
Exactly.
Getting a chance, giving the people a chance to actually vote for something? Seems to me that the Democrats have a very interesting definition of what democracy is today. I mean, it's their side trying to put their main opponent in the presidential race in jail or ban him from the ballot, and somehow this is democracy?
That's democracy. Democracy is giving insurance benefits to illegals and not citizens.
Not citizens.
Yeah. Reaction. Let's see. There's a guy who's written a book about the whole thing, the whole concept of this is Dr. Larry Gersten. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's written books on California's two recall elections. He believes the new threat from the group Rescue California won't be very significant for the governor. Take a listen.
Look very good. It's awfully hard to get all those signatures, and they don't have a lot of money they're spending on this. Cost millions to put this stuff on the ballot. Millions. And they're just going to go house to house and have mail sent out to people instead of going to these shopping centers because it costs too much.
Yeah, but they did it before. And I don't think people feel better about the state and the governor than they did that time. I think they feel more problems are at their door, don't they?
I would think so. But he is right there that it's a big task. But you are right too, Larry. They did it before, and so whether they can generate enough enthusiasm to do it again is we'll just have to wait and see. But it's another interesting story to watch.
Yeah, and it does. I don't know if it tarnish or at least put something so that the nation, as they do these stories like we're doing here, have to talk about the governor and have to talk about crime and immigration and a lot of the policies in the state. And that doesn't bode well. That's not the narrative that Newsom wants to talk about right now, right?
No, certainly not. Certainly not. And he's not going to want to have to go out and raise millions of dollars to compete in a runoff, in a recall, rather, election.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun to see.
All right. What else is going on in the world of politics? What are you watching right now?
Well, watching very closely what's going to happen on Super Tuesday, not only at the presidential level, but we've got five states that will have their full primaries, like California. In California, you know, we've got about 19 of the 52 U.S. House races that's going to feature competition in either this primary or in the general election, and we'll see how many become double Democrat or double Republican runoffs. So I think those are real interesting from a national perspective. And then you have other states, Alabama, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Texas also has their primaries on March the 5th, just like California does. So we've got a lot of things to cover on March the 5th, and we'll see some patterns develop and maybe give us some clues as to what may happen in the future.
Yeah. And as far as Nikki Haley staying in, I would guess she will just kind of stay there, right? I mean, you can be on the ballot. And I noticed, sure. I was looking at mine here in California. Just because you kind of suspend your campaign doesn't mean they go and reprint the ballots. Pretty much all the Correct. Key people who were running, you know, 2 or 3 months ago are still on the ballot, right? You can vote for anyone you want.
That's true. Yes, it is.
So that doesn't really change, but we'll see. Do you think she continues to stay in all the way through?
I would have thought she would have gotten out before South Carolina and not be embarrassed in her own home state. Losing 2-1 in a place that's twice elected you governor within your own party, not only within your own state, but within your own party. And I'm not sure how she thinks that makes her stronger for the future. Presumably she comes back in 2028. She's obviously thinking about that now. I'm not sure doing this and extending a losing campaign, loss after loss after loss, I don't see how that makes her stronger for 2028.
All right, Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com, bringing us a look at the week in politics and doing so. You get a star on your chart this week. A lot of interesting things.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Great, thanks.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
It was a busy week for my next guest. She started out the week with, kind of putting out something that many people didn't expect, saying it was time for both the Rescue California and Save America citizens from across the state serving Governor Gavin Newsom with official recall papers. The recall against Governor Newsom is back. Ann Hyde Dunsmore is joining us from Rescue California. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Larry. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you're going to do it again. Explain.
Well, we were not the original petitioners last time. It was Recall Gavin 2020. They did an amazing job. I came in to that effort months after they started it. And then when we went to file for the extension due to COVID, along with many other petition efforts, we were not the first group to get that permission. I split off with Rescue California to raise money while they continued with their magnificent volunteer effort. And we were able to get to 2.3 as a great coalition, 2.3 million signatures. And we don't need that many this time. So there were just so many things so we could do it if we consider this. No, this just happened and he just did this. Finally, we just said, this is too much. We need to start a recall. He's going unchecked, and these are actually very serious situations.
Now, Governor Newsom has since responded to your efforts to have this recall effort against him. Newsom telling reporters in Los Angeles that he does take it seriously.
It's the same dark forces that went after me last time, went after the state, went after the values of the state. Same folks that want to roll back most of the progress the last half century. Voting rights, civil rights, LGBTQ rights, and women's rights.
And are you part of the same dark forces?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, you know, this is what he does. He pivots, he throws out name calling, and he doesn't answer questions. It's been almost a week since the budget deficit was raised to $73 billion, and he has yet to respond to that. He was in Washington. He was launching his nationwide campaign with an ad campaign on abortion rights. This is a problem in California. Those are things he should address first before he works on his national agenda.
Yeah.
So am I a dark force? No. I like to think I'm an effective force. He's also called us, MAGA Trump supporters. And, I've never voted for Trump. Never, not once. Not that that's anybody's business, but, we're an effective, efficient machine, and I'm glad he's finally taking us seriously. He certainly didn't last time until the last couple months.
Yeah.
And then he spent $95 million against our $8 million.
Here's some more from Governor Newsom. He says the group behind the recall effort has access to the old signature lists.
It doesn't take much in resources to put this back on, and then the taxpayers are going to be out hundreds of millions of dollars. So we're organizing very deliberately. I don't take this lightly.
So he's acknowledging that it is a threat. He realizes you have access to things, and it won't take as much money. Now, there are others out there.
Well, I want to clarify one thing, Larry, because there's actually an illegal point in there.
All right.
You're not allowed to keep copies of the people who sign petitions. The only thing you're allowed to compile is the circulator's information. So do we have access to the team that was in place on the ground last time circulating petitions? Yes. Do we have the list of people who signed the petitions? No. And that would be illegal. So
all right.
No, we don't do that.
So there's an analyst, Dr. Larry Gersten, who has co-authored some books on the two recall elections in the past in the state. He believes the new threat won't be very significant for the Democratic governor.
Doesn't look very good. It's awfully hard to get all those signatures, and they don't have a lot of money they're spending on this. It costs millions to put this stuff on the ballot, millions. And they're just going to go house to house and have mail sent out to people instead of going to these shopping centers because it costs too much.
All right, that's his take. A lot in there.
Well, I don't know this gentleman, but he's clearly never worked on one of these and has probably zero experience or not, and therefore knowledge of what it takes to do this. So, listen, last time the coalition put together 2.3 million signatures. This time we only need 1.6, a minimum of 1.3 invalid signatures. And, technology is such these days that we can do communication a lot easier. That's how we did it last time. I don't know why he's criticizing it, because it worked. We got qualified.
Yep.
And we don't have to do as much. And we didn't spend that much. We spent $4 million maybe in the signature gathering process, maybe $4.5 million. And then the rest of the $8 million was spent in the general just to get it on people's desks to vote for. So we don't spend what other people spend. We have over 1,000 requests right now for petitions. And that's just after 3 days. And that's just being on the news. That's no big pricey outreach. We spent money on lawyers to prepare the paperwork and deliver it. And we spent money on publishing an ad, which we're required to do by law. That's all we spent.
Yeah. So what is the way for people to get a hold of you guys and get the petitions when they're ready and all that stuff?
Thank you for asking. So you can pre-order petitions by going to rescuecalifornia.org, not .com, because that is, sadly, even Bloomberg didn't do their homework very thoroughly and reported that we're a function of that organization, which we are not. Which is a good taxpayer organization, but it's not us.
All right, say it again.
RescueCalifornia.org.
All right.
Please sign up for petitions, and we will deliver them to you as soon as they've been approved.
More from this Dr. Larry Gersten, your best friend here, who you've never met. He explains why it's so hard to get a recall attempted qualified.
12% of the number of people who voted in the last gubernatorial election, in this case, it's actually about 1.4 million legal signatures, hard to get.
Yeah.
It really is. That's a very high threshold, the second highest in all the states that do recalls.
Gotta love this, all this conversation.
I, I've never heard of this guy. I've been involved in some of the biggest winning, you know, signature gathering efforts over the last 50 years. And he has no idea. It is hard, but we've already done it. And it's a joyful group of people that finally get to work on this again. I cannot tell you how fast this movement is back up and running again. It's really, really satisfying. So, hey, you know, maybe he should just come and help out and watch the process. More than willing to give him a desk and have him see it firsthand, because it sure doesn't sound to me like he's ever done that before.
Well,
it's to people who don't know, it sounds Herculean. To people who know and were involved last time, we got this.
You cite in your first press release about this that the recall proponents laid out multiple reasons for recalling Newsom. New compared to the last time is most recently granted 700,000 illegal immigrants free health care and the cost to taxpayers of $3 billion annually, while cutting vital programs for veterans, school children, the disabled, and homeless. And on the phone right now with us, you reminded us that the budget deficit that has to be made up, the shortfall, is huge. We're giving all this money out, or he is overseeing that. At the same time, we've got a big hole to fill, and it's concerning, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got actually to a point where he's kind of spread himself a little too thin. I don't, he has committed to passing Prop 1. He's using our veterans as a human shield, to push this initiative. He's already spent $15 billion on homeless, efforts that have failed according to statistics. We are doing worse now with our homeless situation than we were before he spent the $15 billion. And now in this bond issue, not only is he increasing our indebtedness, which we have to pay a higher interest rate than most states. We don't have a AAA bond rating anymore, so our indebtedness is more expensive. But he's asking for another $6.5 billion. This guy is, $3 billion for insurance for illegal immigrants, another $6.5 billion for the homeless issue. That's not baked into the $73 billion. And then there's what's commonly referred to as budget gimmickry, which he used that word. It's a bookkeeping gimmick. And one of those things that's particularly egregious is the burying of $30 to $40 billion in EDD scandal fraud that happened during COVID with COVID relief money, with the incompetent distribution of funds. And that's buried in and offset by a proposed tax increase on small businesses. So the $30 to $40 billion is not part of the $73 billion. The other thing that's not part of the $73 billion is the $300 billion of indebtedness on COVID loans from the federal government that they want back. So I hope that that's what he was back in Washington negotiating on, because all that would put us at $500 billion in debt.
Yep,
it is. And he's still saying it's $39 or $38 billion, hasn't even addressed the upgrade, which happened within 3 weeks, 4 weeks at the most, from 68 to 73 projected deficit.
And
my guess is that the May revised numbers are going to make it go even higher.
Final 30 seconds.
Yes,
give
sir.
The contact information to get advance request for the petitions. Where do you go?
RescueCalifornia.org. RescueCalifornia.org.
Well, you surprised a lot of people. This came kind of out of the blue it wasn't even on the radar, but there's a lot of angst out there, and it feels like there's more angst just anecdotally about the state and immigration and, the crime and all that now than the last time you did this. So that's got to add up to some value, sadly.
Well, voter turnout is projected to be at a historic low in California this time. We're looking at 25% turnout, maybe top.
Out of time. And I Dunsmore. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer. You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Scott Baugh would like to represent the 47th Congressional District in Orange County, California. He is joining us right now with Election Day just a couple of days away and voting having taken place for a good part of a month. This is election season. How are you? Thanks for being on the program again.
Larry, it's always great to be with you. It is election season, and oddly enough, we are having a record low turnout participation by voters across the spectrum.
Yeah, we're seeing that across the state. There is an estimate that it may be at like 35% or lower for the election.
Paul Mitchell from PDI estimated the turnout was going to be 29%. That's just stunning in a presidential primary.
So what does it mean for Republicans that, want to get, in the final two, because we have the jungle primary? What does it mean for Republicans?
Well, it's actually good news for Republicans here, because the turnout, particularly in the 47th, is running roughly even between Republicans and Democrats. And so typically in the last two elections, you've seen Democrats with the early vote run far ahead of Republicans, and then Republicans tend to catch up on election day because a lot of them like to go to the polls. But right now we're seeing a step for step keeping even with the Democrats. And so I'm anticipating Republican turnout to be a little more robust than a Democrat turnout. And of course that helps Republicans.
Yeah. Your number one challenger you see is Dave Min, right?
Well, Larry, I can only tell you, in all the polling that I've seen, there's been six or eight polls done in this race. I'm consistently in the number one spot. David Min has consistently been in the number two spot. And what's interesting, there's been about $5 million spent to promote the other Democrat and to hit Dave Min for having a DUI. And it doesn't seem to be moving the numbers.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it just is what it is. It's like... It's just interesting to me that they spent all this money. It's out of state money promoting an out of district candidate. So it just doesn't seem to be landing well. So, I can't ever make solid predictions, but based on polling, it would look like the runoff would be between myself and David Min.
Yeah. It's interesting. What do you think of the jungle primary? We're seeing all these campaigns around the state. I'm not sure I am. What's your take?
I'm not a big fan at all, and I opposed it when it was proposed. The bottom line is that the idea, it was proposed to bring in more moderates into the Democratic Party and more moderates into the Republican Party as representatives, and it's had the opposite effect. It has polarized the electorate, and you end up with a state, 15, 20 years later, that is hardcore left progressive, dominated in the state legislature by the progressives, and then you have fewer and fewer Republican districts out there that end up producing very conservative Republicans. So it's really hasn't worked as an experiment. I think we ought to get rid of it altogether.
Yeah. Americans say immigration is their top concern. That's according to a new Gallup poll released that found 28% of Americans naming immigration as the country's top issue. It's an 8% increase from last month and the first time since 2019 that it has been named by Americans as the nation's highest or biggest concern. I'm wondering if it's those high-profile cases where an illegal immigrant is released after committing one crime and allegedly goes on to kill somebody, if that's starting to get some headlines.
Larry, I think that's part of it. The other part is simply two enormous data points. One is 10 million illegal immigrants have crossed our border since Joe Biden became president. 2 million, maybe as high as 3 million, are gotaways, meaning that they have no intent to comply with the law. These are people that, in this category, you have terrorists and drug addicts or drug pushers and human sex traffickers. And so that's one. 10 million is an alarming number, coupled with these, what you just said, where people get released and commit more crimes. But the other number that is really stunning the American people is the 120,000 deaths per year from overdoses driven by fentanyl. Larry, this stat will just sober you up. There have been more deaths from overdoses in this country in the last 22 years than there were in all of the wars we have fought. Imagine that. And by the way, these aren't just overdose deaths. That's kind of a misnomer. These are poisonings. A lot of people take fentanyl or another drug or another pill, and it's laced with fentanyl, and they die quickly. And that's why you need the naloxone product to reverse that, which, you know, states and counties are pushing that out there all over, because this is a real pandemic with respect to what's going on at our southern border. So when you have drug traffickers coming across, peddling all this stuff from China, killing the American people, and you have 10 million immigrants coming across along with it, it makes immigration the number one issue in the country.
What's two and three as far as issues?
Crime and the economy. Crime comes with number one, the immigration. But you look at that same Gallup poll that you mentioned. You remember back in the 70s, there was this Carter malaise. Well, now they describe the economy as anemic. And so it's very similar to what you have in the 70s. The fundamentals are all messed up. We have too much debt. We keep spending more and more, which, of course, drives inflation. And overall food prices, since Biden became president, are up 17%. And so you have gas prices up. You have food prices up. You have rent prices up. You have the cost of insurance going up. And so the American people are starting to feel very uneasy, very uncertain, very uncomfortable about the direction of the country. And I think they want a change in leadership.
Yeah. There's a thought that Biden is going to make the issue of businesses shrinking the size of their product an issue, as if blaming business, when that's only a result of the fact that people can't afford the higher price, so they have to make the packaging smaller, fewer cookies, whatever, and he's going after the wrong guy.
That's absolutely right. Biden wants to blame everybody else except himself for his reckless spending policies. The bottom line is the American consumer and the American producer, they adjust to what the government does. They don't live in a static world. They live in a dynamic world. And when government does something stupid, they adjust in the private sector. And then the Democrats or the government sits back and condemns them for making that adjustment. It's all driven by the policies of this government that's spending too much and has open borders.
Yeah, I saw an ad or story that says one of the major cereal manufacturers is saying that people should eat cereal for dinner to save money on soaring food prices, kind of offering up that as an idea. And I'm thinking it kind of harkens back to the days when people had to make compromises. You heard about people sadly having to eat dog food or something. We shouldn't have to go through this, should we?
Well, we shouldn't have to go through it, Larry, but this is the inevitable outcome of a bad policy driven by the federal government. Larry, let's focus on the debt for a minute that drives this inflation. $34 trillion, and people say, wow, that's a big number. It is a big number. It's a huge number. It's 125% debt-to-GDP ratio. But that's not a static number either. That debt within 8 years is going to $50 trillion. And in another 25 years, that debt's going to be $90 trillion. Our interest on the national debt is approaching $1 trillion a year. So this right now things are tough, but they're only going to get worse unless we continue, unless we reverse this spending binge that we're on. Because we don't have a revenue problem in this country or in this state. We have record revenues. The problem is, whatever that revenue is, we go out and spend a whole lot more, and that's just stealing from the next generation.
Yeah. And California, by the way, which has to balance its budget, you know, first the 60-something billion shortfall, then the governor thought it was 37, now it's higher than that. And then the legislature and the governor in this state, and I know you're going for Congress here, but in this state are giving illegals health care.
We're treating illegal immigrants better than we treat our veterans, which is a shame. The bottom line, Larry, is that we as a country are extremely generous. We are a giving country. We allow over 1 million legal immigrants in every year. And if you want more legal immigration, that's fine, because legal immigration works. You're able to vet and identify who's coming into the country. You got to make sure they're not terrorists or drug traffickers or sex traffickers. And that works. And so for folks to say, oh, yeah, we need to take care of the world by giving them free health care, you will destroy America. You'll destroy American finances by doing that. And that has to stop.
Yeah. Big issue, of course, the president trying to push Congress that's in now to approve this deal, supposedly on immigration, which I'm told is not a pretty good deal. It's a bad deal.
Larry, it's a horrible deal, and I'll tell you why. This deal is all designed to be camouflaged, to make it look like they've done something. Buried in the detail of this deal is 1.5 million, no, 1.8 million, I think, illegal immigrants can continue to come across the border. Think about that. That's not a lot different than what we have right now. So they passed this bill pretending they solved the problem, given the president more authority to deal with the issue. In the meantime, they're giving a nice wink to everybody else saying, let's go ahead and let 1.8 million more in every year. Well, that's a pig in a poke. It doesn't work. It's very misleading. And the bottom line is, if you have the will, you can stop that right now. The president doesn't need a new bill to stop all this amnesty nonsense that they're granting. And by the way, with the way the amnesty works is they get to come on and say, hey, I'm here for amnesty. There's really no scrutiny. They get shipped off. They get flown at taxpayer expense. They get a check to go settle in somewhere, and they won't get a hearing on that for 5, 6, 7 years. In the meantime, you have these 10 million are here, and if Joe Biden's elected again, that number is going to be 20 million. And so it has to stop.
Yeah. By the time this airs, Donald Trump, who's running against Biden, I guess, ultimately, will have gone to the border, and we'll see what they say. If Biden turns around and says, all right, I'm going to do all these things, I'm going to close the border, will that boost his numbers and then he wins?
Well, I think the problem with Joe Biden is people gave him the benefit of the doubt the first time. So when he goes out and does gimmicks like this, they're not giving him the benefit of the doubt anymore. They see him as a weak leader, and they want change. And so I don't think it particularly boosts his numbers. I think it'll be good policy, but I don't think it'll rescue him.
Yeah. I hear all these ads on the radio. You know, this person is a MAGA, this, or a Trump supporter. How shameful. Is that something to have to run from in California or not really?
I missed that. Shameful to support what?
MAGA issues or Trump liking. I mean, some of the ads on radio about some of the candidates, you know, from the Democrat side are picking on people for liking, having liked Donald Trump or thinking that MAGA is okay or bad or something. It's like, what is that? I mean, you should run on who you are and what you stand for.
Larry, it's the attempt to polarize the American electorate. Listen, I've endorsed Donald Trump. I think his policies are far superior to Joe Biden's policy. If Donald Trump were president, we wouldn't have a crisis at the southern border. If Donald Trump were president, we wouldn't be in a war in Ukraine right now.
Out of time. Scott Baugh, thank you.
In the meantime, if you want to learn more, it's go to www.baughforcongress.com.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Well, voters are going to the polls on Tuesday, but they've actually gotten their ballots to mail back about a month now, almost a month. And on there, there's one proposition. In fact, the story has it that Governor Newsom wanted there just to be one proposition for folks to look at. And what does it all mean? Assemblymember Diane Dixon is joining us right now. 72nd Assembly District.
That is correct.
Good to have you on Newport Beach. It's always beautiful there. To help understand from the no perspective what this is about, because, you know, we all want to help the homeless. I mean, we've been improving tax measures for years on this. LA has done H and HHH. And you look at this and you read it and your eyes kind of glaze over. It talks about moving money over here for that. They're asking us to figure out a lot here. You've been opposed to it. Tell us why.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thank you for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and talk to your listeners. Yes, I am opposed to Proposition 1. Let me say it this way, too. I support not throwing extra billions at homelessness. I'll get into that in a moment. I certainly support mental health treatment in whatever way works, except I do not support the state taxing taxpayers, residents, through their property taxes for another bond measure. In this case, it's $6.5 or $6 billion, but over 30 years with financing costs, it's over $10 billion. And the basic principle I have is I do not think the state can manage major expenditure programs like this across the state. And in my opinion, the best level of government to address these important issues, societal issues in our communities, is the board, is the county at the county level, and the board of supervisors at all counties. So What is happening is that there are current programs that the county is currently doing, and our county, Orange County, has been doing especially well in addressing homelessness and addressing mental health. The mental health state funds come from a millionaire's tax. You probably remember when that was passed in, I think, 2012. And all incomes over $1 million are taxed at a certain percentage additionally. And that money goes right down to counties for mental health. Well, that's been working well. And our county Orange County has been developing the programs and the workforce capability to address mental health. So Proposition 1 would say, wait a minute, the state wants not only to be in charge of the programs, but it wants to take back some of that $1 million tax money that the counties have allocated and in forward-looking planning have already allocated. Now they have to reduce their allocation by about $160 million a year and send that money up to the state. So back to the original principle. These are needs that a local government, a county government should be addressing, and not one size fits all from the state capital, from the state level.
I heard a theory, and this is only a theory, that Governor Newsom's feeling the heat on homelessness and that he may have political aspirations later on. And thus, he has been really behind this because he's feeling like, I've got to do something here or I'm looking really bad.
I think you're right. And just as a reminder, there was a bond measure to the voters that the voters approved in 2018 to allocate, I think it was to fund $6 billion for 20,000 housing units for the homeless in 2018, so 6 years ago. Out of the 20,000 housing units, fewer than 1,600 have been actually built.
Ouch.
So that's just one example of the problems that I believe cannot be run. These programs cannot be run and managed at the state level. As to the homeless, just a reminder, we've already spent, and this is where the heat is probably coming from, $20 billion. On top of that bond measure, $20 billion has been spent since 2018.
And yet anybody who anecdotally looks at our streets, and it's not just L.A., we're seeing them showing up in Orange County, too, homeless.
Well, and I don't know if you saw today's L.A. Times. I don't know when this is going to broadcast, but this is February 28th. The city of Ojai has a homeless camp on their city hall grounds. There are issues related to homeless, what we can and cannot do, cities can and cannot do because of federal law. That case law is actually going to the Supreme Court with the summer expected that there will be a decision.
That's right. It's an Oregon case that they're throwing to the Supreme Court on just how far the city can go and say you can't camp there. Assemblymember Diane Dixon with us, 72nd District. All right, I want to talk about legislative priorities for you've got a package of bills. You've been busy. What's up? What are you working on?
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, to that last, I think it was Friday, February 9th, I think, or 16th, a week or so ago, was the last day for all bills for this session. The session runs from January to August 31st. We're the second half of a 2-year session. So, yes, I've introduced some new bills. Two bills especially relate to what everybody's interested in, seeing safety in our bicycle world on e-bikes. A number of other electeds are introducing e-bike legislation. What I've introduced is AB 1773 to give back, another local government aspect here, to give back to local government the enforcement powers for e-bikes. Unbeknownst to me, even when I was on the city council, I did not know this, that there was new state law that grouped together regular bicycles and e-bikes. And so there was no differentiation when they rode on sidewalks specifically. Well, the boardwalk term is not defined in current state law, and so therefore there was nothing the local police could do, in this case Newport Beach or Huntington Beach, could do in my district, could do about e-bikes on the boardwalk because there was no word for boardwalk in the state law. So I'm cleaning that up. So it gives local government, local enforcement authority on e-bikes on the boardwalk. Secondly, this is really important. New information that I did not know for e-bikes, AB 1774, to prohibit the sale of e-bike tuning kits. Do you know what an e-bike tuning kit is? You could buy off Amazon, an e-bike owner, a kit that will increase the speed limit. Ooh. It's the governor. It's a technical term for controlling the speed on an e-bike. The speed governor, which is limited to 10 or 12 or 15, depending on your e-bike, this can be up to 40 miles per hour. So when you see these e-bikes zipping down the highway, they probably are have tuned it up through a tuning kit. My bill, AB 1774, would prohibit the sale. They mostly get these off Amazon, so they would be that will do a lot to stem that. So those speeds, speeding is a serious problem. And the speeding side, some other legislators are working on controlling and enforcing the speed limit, but making it so e-bikes cannot be speed accelerated. So those are two important bills for safety in our communities.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Were you going to ask me a question?
I was going to ask you, anything on the crime area? You and I last talked about just how rampant crime is, from smash and grabs to whatnot, across Southern California. And I don't know if I shared with you, this is in Newport Beach. I was in one of the pharmacies. I won't mention the major brand. There are a couple of big ones. Mm-hmm. And a couple of people came in, and they were all covered up head to toe, and they had big trash bags, and they just started scooping items right off the shelf, just with their arm, just scooping them into a bag, and then out the door. Nobody said stop. Everybody kept on shopping, kind of minding their own business. But this is not an L.A. downtown problem. This is here in our community.
Okay, let me tell you a couple of hot news flashes on that subject. I'm a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus. It's bipartisan, bicameral, and there's a package of bills on specifically around retail theft that are bipartisan, that is working through, will be introduced or have been introduced, and they'll be assigned to the committee. It addresses, for example, a common air issue that we can't enforce on is that aggregated crime. So if someone steals and one day goes to multiple stores, the law, which is Prop 47, prohibits any enforcement of more than one case on a single day. So, crazily enough.
Isn't it like $900 each of the places, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the good news, yesterday we just had an update on this. You may have already heard about it because Orange County DA Todd Spitzer has talked about it. There is an initiative being circulated. And they've already, out of the 550 or 600,000 signatures they need, they have over 500,000 signatures. It has to go to the voters because it's reforming the problems that Prop 47 created. So tell your listeners, or I'm telling your listeners, if you hear about the initiative, and it's a three-part initiative, it relates to a lot of this retail theft. It relates to fentanyl and enhanced penalties for fentanyl. And so it's really important that people sign the initiative. So it will be on the ballot measure, will be on the November 24 ballot if it gets the number of signatures and they think they'll make it.
Yeah. Lastly, anything else? We have 1 minute left. Squeeze it in there.
You know what? Today is February 28th. March 5th is the primary election ballot. I am telling everyone, just vote. The early returns, a very low level turnout on voting. It's really important for people to be involved in their local elections, in their state, and the presidential politics, whatever. Just vote. It's so important. I trust the Orange County voting system, the registrar of voters. There's a lot of security measures in that. You get a barcode confirmation that my ballot's been received and it's been accounted for. And it really allows us, early voting allows early reporting on election day at 8 p.m. We'll get the results. Otherwise, for the people who vote just on election day, which is legal, it just takes 2 weeks to get those results counted. It's so important for people to vote. I just encourage everybody to vote. It's a mail-in ballot. Kind of cumbersome. You have to take it to a ballot box. I put mine in that ballot on the street, the ballot box. It got counted. It got received and counted. Go to your voting center. Have trust in it. Vote early.
Assemblymember Diane Dixon, 72nd Assembly District. Thank you so much.
Larry, anytime. Take care.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer.